This is the voice of contract management presented by the law firm of Kroll & Mooring, exclusively for NCMA. Stay up to date on all things contract management 5 minutes at a time. Our team at Kroll & Mooring presents these podcasts to keep you up to speed on a bi-monthly basis. We will cover everything from regulatory updates to crucial changes that affect government contracting.
We are your co-hosts for this edition, Peter Ayer and Chris Ayle. We're tracking a wide variety of activities relating to the new administration, including executive orders, directives, and responses among contractors about how they're adjusting to shifting requirements and expectations. We're recording this on October 1st, and as we speak, Congress has not passed crucial funding bills for the start of FY26. As a result, the government has been forced to shut down for lack of funding. Contractors and federal funding recipients have lots of questions, and our goal today is to address some of the most common topics. I'm joined today by my partner, Chris Hale, who's going to unpack this important development. And although each situation is highly fact-dependent, Chris is going to provide some general observations and reactions. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining today. I know you're very popular at the moment. Let's start with some of the legal reasons that Congress's failure to pass the appropriations causes that shutdown. Can you give us that background?
Sure, Peter, and happy to be here. The real reason for the shutdown is something called the Anti-Deficiency Act. And most contractors have heard of the Anti-Deficiency Act. What it does, it prevents federal officials from spending funds that haven't yet been appropriated by Congress. There are only a few limited exceptions to that rule as well. And those exceptions are emergencies involving safety of human life or the protection of property. The other aspect of the law is the prohibition on accepting voluntary services. What this prohibition does is exactly what it says. It prevents the government officials from accepting voluntary services, whether it's from employees or from contractors. And what these laws in effect mean is that when Congress doesn't pass appropriation, then the administration cannot continue, except in those limited circumstances, to receive the services of employees or spend money that it doesn't yet have on new contracts.
So, Chris, that obviously has a ton of impacts for contractors. Can you talk about some of the key aspects of those implications and what contractors should be thinking about?
One of those immediate impacts is new awards, option exercises. If there are not funds available for the administration to obligate to that action, to the new award or to the option exercise, then the Anti-Deficiency Act prevents the government from taking those actions. So typically what we see is with few new awards and few option exercises during the government shutdown. Again, the exceptions to the Anti-Deficiency Act could apply if the contract was needed for the purpose of protecting for the safety of human life or protection of property, then there could still be a new award there. There also are cases where the agency has multi-year funds or another source of funding beyond the annual appropriations. And in those cases, the agencies may be able to take action. But those are the exceptions to the norm. And so in most cases, what contractors are seeing is a cessation of new awards across the broad spectrum of government contracting. For existing contracts, there are a number of potential issues, and those issues really depend on the specific contract and the circumstances, but there certainly are some common themes across those. And the first issue is whether the contract is still funded. If you have a contract that has funding on it and that funding is sufficient to continue operations, then the general rule is that the contractor can continue to work. But if the contract does not have sufficient funding, if it has already run out of funds, or if it is about to run out of funds, then the contractor may be pushed into a position where it cannot continue to perform except at risk. And one of the things I really want to point out in this context are typical clauses that come up when we're talking about contract funding, and those are the limitation of costs and limitation of funds clauses under the FAR, or the limitation of government obligation or limitation of government liability clauses under the DFARS. What these clauses do is state clearly that there is a specific amount of funding on the contract, that the contractor is authorized to work up to that amount of funding. But past that amount, the contractor is not obligated to perform and the government is not obligated to pay. So contractors need to be mindful that even if there is some money on the contract, of how long that money is likely to last, particularly if this shutdown continues for an extended period. We don't know how long this shutdown may go. If there are no further funds on the contract, then the contractor is not authorized or obligated to continue working. And in fact, if the contractor does continue to work, when appropriations do become available, the government is not obligated to pay the contractor for those services. So that's the first sort of general theme within those existing contracts. The second is there any direction from the government? Some contracting officers could issue stop work orders to contractors. If the contracting officer is issued a stop work order, then obviously the contractor needs to stop work, as the contracting officers may also issue other directions to modify the activities during the period. And that may have come immediately before the shutdown, or it might come during the course of the shutdown, depending upon the circumstances. So it's important for contractors to be mindful of what is coming in from the government and therefore what the contract expectations are. Regardless of those things, though, there could be operational impacts. And what we often see is that the government, it does not provide any particular direction. The contracting officer goes home on a furlough and the contractor is left to perform, but that performance is impaired. The contractor may not have access to the government facilities that it needs to be able to work. It may not have the instructions that it needs from the government in order to take the next step in performance. It may be in a position where in-process inspections are required during production, and the contractor is unable to move to the next step without government approvals. These and other similar types of things can cause serious issues for a contractor that otherwise would like to continue to keep performing. Typically, what contractors have to do in that circumstance is just try to find workarounds while at the same time being very clear and communicative to the government about the impacts and the steps that they're taking to deal with those. We'll talk probably more about that at another point here. But another big question, particularly if this is a long-term shutdown, more than a few days, maybe more than a week, however we want to define long-term. But if it is a longer-term shutdown, there's a question of payments. While a contractor may have a solid contract, that contract may be funded, the contractor may be entitled to and obligated to perform, when the contractor submits an invoice, there may be no one in the government there to receive and approve it and pay it. In that case, the contractor is in a position where over time, a government failure to pay can build up, and that can be a stress on the contractor. So that is something the contractors are, I know, very mindful of and very concerned about if this is a long shutdown. So those are the sort of key areas, I think, where contractors need to sort of get their arms around the issues and begin to establish their game plans.
Chris, what about recovery for increased costs? I know a lot of companies are wondering about the likelihood of being able to recover those increased costs. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So there are a couple of practical aspects to this, but also some legal aspects to this. One of the legal aspects is that a government shutdown being caused by the failure of Congress to act is generally considered a sovereign act of the government. And what I mean by that is that rather than an act taken in the government's capacity as a contracting party, it's an act taken by the government in its capacity as the sovereign of the nation. And the law is that the government commonly is not liable under a contract for the impact of a sovereign act. So that creates an initial hurdle for some recoveries. But that said, the issue is very contract specific. And in fact, contractors historically have found methods of recovery, have been reimbursed for costs. Not in all circumstances have these occurred, but in specific circumstances, there are methods to obtain recovery where the contractor has been harmed. So some of the critical drivers of these are things like, has a stop work order been issued? If a stop work order has been issued, then a contractor is entitled to the impacts, the cost impacts, schedule impacts of stopping work and then restarting work at a later point. That is spelled out in the stop work clause, and the contracting officer's action invoking it gives the contractor entitlement. There are also many circumstances in which a contract either expressly or often impliedly promises the contractor that certain facilities or government resources or personnel will be available during the course of performance or on a certain schedule in the course of performance. And where the contract does that, then again, even though in theory the government might be able to argue that it is not supposed to be liable for sovereign acts when it's an impact on a contract, the court case law says that even if that's the case, the government also can decide that nevertheless, if such events occur, it will be liable. And so there's precedent for that. There are also other potentially applicable clauses that the contractors need to be aware of. Obviously, the changes clause, particularly if there are government directions coming in. The government delay of work clause, another potential clause. So it's important in all these circumstances to understand what the facts are on the ground and what the contract in fact does say.
Chris, that's excellent background. So I suspect one of the most common questions from companies is, okay, so what should we be doing now, today, in light of these issues? And of course, it's going to depend very much on the company, the contract, super fact dependent, but in general, what are some of the things that you've been thinking about and that companies should be thinking about in terms of what we should be doing now?
So certainly what contractors should be doing now is getting their arms around the facts and the circumstances. As I was saying a moment ago, are there directions? Is there funding? And also understanding at what point in the future there may be sort of key stall points, if there are not government inputs, are government approvals, are government facilities available, where are those going to be so that as contractors, they can begin to set that game plan and begin to communicate with the government about it, to inform the government what its needs are and what its plans are. The one thing that could be helpful in that as well is understanding the particular agency's shutdown implementation plans. The federal government has, each agency has a shutdown plan. These are not collected typically in a single place, but agency by agency, they are available and they lay out in general terms what that agency plan is, what types of activities will continue, what types won't. That can provide a little bit more insight into what you as a contractor might expect for your performance and the impacts on you. The other is, as I say, get your arms around what clauses are in the contracts, and where there are clauses that may provide entitlement, pay particular attention to notice requirements in those clauses. So the government delay of work clause that I mentioned a moment ago, for example, only allows recovery of costs that are incurred no more than 20 days before notice of the delay is given to the government. So it's important in that and under the clauses as well to clearly communicate the event that's occurred, that it's causing an impact, and that the contractor reserves its right to recovery for those impacts. As these begin to progress a little bit more, then I think the typical steps really should be one, clearly document the impacts, keep records of those, keep records of the communications about the impacts, track the costs as best you can. Change order accounting is ideal, but try to track the costs that are driven by government delays or non-availability of certain resources, whatever is happening as a result of the shutdown. As I said, continue to communicate those impacts and plans that you as a contractor have, including how you're attempting to mitigate the impacts and costs. And that might include reductions in staff or other actions. But around that reduction in staff context, the one thing also to be very mindful of is to evaluate what the options are from an employment perspective. Recognize that attempting to navigate these circumstances can raise really a host of issues, whether it's for potential furloughs or layoffs or compliance with the Fair Labor Standards Act or state law equivalents or the federal or state WARN Acts. All those need to be carefully considered. And ideally, those are considered in the early stages before it becomes the critical moment. So you have time to map out a plan. And the final thing I'll say is be mindful of the duty to proceed, which is that under the disputes clause of every contract, the contractor has a duty to proceed even while there are disputes or disagreements with the government under the contract. And that duty to proceed is an important obligation under the law, and the failure to adhere to it can create liability for the contractor to the government. And so while there are potential exceptions to that duty, and the longer this shutdown goes on, the more substantial the impacts become, the more important some of those exceptions might be to a particular contractor. It's important to be mindful of that duty and recognize that before taking any very serious action, for example, ceasing performance without a direction from the government to do so, to very carefully evaluate the circumstances and what the legal obligations and rights are for the contractor.
Chris, all very, very helpful. Really appreciate your input and expertise on this.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening to the Voice of Contract Management, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring exclusively for NCMA. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to discuss all things government contracting. In the meantime, explore your learning opportunities at www.ncmahq.org/coursecatalog.